this. So what I'll talk about today is thinking about coupling a metal, so a Fermi liquid, to the Goldstone bosons of some broken symmetry, and ask the question when these couplings are actually important and change the basic nature of these states. So, for example, when this coupling would change the Fermi liquid into, for example, a non-Fermi liquid. You'd think that such a basic question would already have received a complete sort of treatment, but somehow this, I think, has been missed in the past. So because I phrased the title as a question, let me give you the answer. Okay, so that's the answer to this question. So this Q is really the generator of these Goldstone modes. I'll give you examples and tell you exactly what this Q is. But when this generator fails to commute with translations, okay, that's when interesting things happen. Okay, that's when Goldstone modes, when coupled to a Fermi liquid, ends up doing something drastic and completely changing the nature of your state. Okay, so let me sort of elaborate on this. I think many of you may have hoped that this would be the only slide in my talk, and you could all go away. So let me actually tell you how we came up with this criterion, and give you some examples. Okay. This work is really due to my student, Haruki Watanabe. He's a third-year graduate student. He'll be graduating next year, and that's the reference. A special thanks to Max Metlitsky, who made many very useful, very important suggestions during the course of this work. And I think anyone else would have agreed to have been a co-author, but Max has very high standards, so so we have to be content with thanking him. Okay, so let me just spend one or two transparencies on reviewing the basic ingredients, which is Fermi liquids. So we all know that when you take a Fermi gas, add interactions, you can actually add fairly strong interactions. It doesn't change the essential character of the state. You still have these quasi-particle excitations near the Fermi surface. And they are a well-defined excitation in the sense that the width of these excitations is much smaller than the frequency of the excitation itself. And so they are long-lived in that sense. And the sharpness of these excitations gets more and more, they get more and more sharp as you approach the Fermi surface. Okay, this goes as E squared, whereas the energy itself, of course, is just E. Okay, so this is basically how we think of metals. Okay, a metal is described by a Fermi surface where you have these long-lived quasi-particles. And a basic question in solid-state physics is, are there metals that are not Fermi liquids? Okay, that for example, could conduct electricity, but are not described by this particular theory. Okay, and so there have been various suggestions, and one framework that keeps appearing is to take a Fermi gas and couple it to some gapless bosons that mediate some interactions between these fermions. So you have this Fermi gas Lagrangian, you have a theory for just the bosonic degree of freedom, and then you couple the two. Okay, now bosons typically are either they are gapped or they are condensed. So unlike fermions, you don't have some gapless state typically. So you have this mass term in this bosonic theory. If it's positive, it's gapped. If it's negative, it's condensed. And there's a critical point where this, in a mean field theory, where this m is zero, where this these bosons are gapless. Okay, and these two excitations, the boson and the fermions, are coupled via the simple Yukawa coupling. Okay, so this is appropriate if this order parameter, this bosonic field, is, for example, a zero wave vector object. It couples fermions at the same momentum. For example, that could be a nematic order parameter. This is some phase diagram, one of these iron nictide materials, where it's believed that there's a nematic transition, nematic in the sense that you break the square symmetry down to that of a rectangle. Okay, so really speaking, you should call this a tetragonal to orthorhombic transition. But the order parameter for that is like an Ising field that will couple in this way to the fermions. Okay, so if you're, yeah, question.
If this was a metal or something, work for metal, and do you have a specific model for this Mosonic degrees of freedom? Are these spawners or
what? Okay, so this, what I'm thinking about over here is really these pneumatic excitations. Okay, so you have an order parameter which tells you, the, for example, the length of the two sides of a square, the difference between the two lengths.
Right. But these are degrees of freedom of the lattice.
Yeah, of the lattice, for example. Although you could also imagine them coming entirely from the electrons. And you could think of some, you could have a theory of just electrons with some strong interactions. You could decouple the interactions in this channel, introduce Hubbard-Stanovich field, and you can think of it as an independent field if you like. But it's sort of more convenient to think of it this way, as that being an external field. But for our purposes, it won't really matter where the origin of this is. Okay, so people have studied this in great detail, this kind of critical point. And if you just examine the physics near this point, so everywhere else over here and over there, you have the Fermi liquid physics, as long as you don't go below this transition temperature. What you find within some simple-minded theories is that, in fact, the bosons, because they propagate through this medium of a lot of gapless electrons, they end up getting damped, they end up getting overdamped, in fact. This is called Landau damping. And if you look at what the effect of these Landau damped bosons is on the fermions, you find that you destroy the Fermi liquid, you get a lifetime for the electron that actually scales to zero slower than the energy itself. Okay, so there are no well-defined quasi-particles. You know, this is still something that's under active study, but this rough picture seems to be holding up. This sort of field was reopened recently by Sung-Sik Lee and Max and Subir and Senthil's group. But I think roughly speaking, this picture is still what is believed to happen, that coupling to this critical bosonic degree of freedom, you destroy the Fermi liquid, you end up with, again, a metallic state that's a non-Fermi liquid. Okay, now other instabilities might intervene, depends on the symmetries that you have in your system. For example, the particular example I gave, you may end up getting superconductivity. But the essential point is that it's no longer tenable to think of these gapless bosons and the Fermi liquid as being simply some independent degrees of freedom. Their coupling is relevant and they're going to change the physics. Okay, so so a question you may ask is, can you get this kind of physics not just at one point in your parameter space, but actually in a phase? Okay, are they non-Fermi liquid phases? Okay, and one reason you may want to do that is there are some interesting experiments. This is what actually got us thinking about the problem. In this particular material, manganese silicon, it's a three-dimensional metal. It undergoes some sort of magnetic transition at ambient pressure. But if you put on a sufficient amount of pressure, you lose this simple magnetic order and you get into some region which has various unusual properties. And one of the unusual properties is it has a very strange dependence of resistivity on temperature. Okay, so in a usual Fermi liquid, the resistivity, the change in resistivity of the temperature simply goes as T squared. Here it seems to fit this law T to the 3/2 over a wide range of temperatures. Okay, so at least two orders of magnitude in temperature. And this is a very clean metal, so you can actually go and look down at these low temperatures and see some temperature dependence of the resistivity. Yeah, and this seems to be a phase because you can change the pressure, and there's a wide range of pressure over which you see the same physics. Okay, so we've been thinking for a long time about theories that might give you a non-Fermi liquid phase. Okay, so so for this, if you want to go back to this idea of coupling the electrons to some gapless bosons, you need some physical principle that will keep the bosons gapless. Okay, not this tuning idea. You want the bosons to simply be gapless over an entire range of parameters. Okay, so there are basically two ideas for how to do this. One is if these bosons were actually gauge bosons. If they're photons, you don't need to do any special tuning to keep them gapless, they're just gapless. Okay, now, of course, if they're photons, if they're the photons of our world, then it turns out that the coupling to the electrons is too weak. There are various kinematical constraints, that essentially make their effect too weak to be an explanation for a non-Fermi liquid phase. And I could get emergent photons, but that, of course, is an exotic ingredient. You know, you'd like to be as simple as possible in order to get this non-Fermi liquid physics. Okay, so so the other possibility that you're left with is Goldstone modes. Okay, so that's another way to have gapless bosons. If you have a continuous symmetry that's spontaneously broken, in this particular case, the symmetry would be translation symmetry. So so people have proposed various kinds of exotic magnetic orders that are incommensurate, so some sort of incommensurate magnetic order that breaks this continuous translation symmetry that would give rise to phonons. Those are the Goldstone modes, and they would be gapless. And could you have a coupling between these Goldstone modes and electrons leading to a non-Fermi liquid behavior? Okay, so so I'll answer this question at the end for this particular kind of order, but I think you get the general picture. There are many situations where we'd like to know the answer of what this coupling does. Okay, so so let me give you some examples of these number Goldstone modes. Of course, the most important example are phonons of a crystal lattice. You break the translation symmetry, so the generator that is broken in this symmetry broken phase is this the generator of translations, which is simply the momentum. Yeah, and the Goldstone mode is described by this displacement of the crystal lattice. This is a vector which tells you how the atoms are displaced relative to some reference configuration. Okay, so that's one example. Another may be the phonons in a superfluid. So here what's broken is the so-called gauge symmetry, which is a pretty bad name, but I guess you all know what happens in helium-4. You spontaneously break a symmetry that's generated by the total number of particles, and the Goldstone mode field in this case is the superfluid phase. Okay, so, so now let's think about coupling these Goldstone modes to electrons. What form does that coupling take? Okay, so it turns out that the reason, by and large, Goldstone modes don't do much to the electrons is that when you couple them to the electronic degrees of freedom, they come together with a spatial derivative. Okay, so so I gave the example of a quantum critical point where there was a field phi coupled to psi dagger psi. In contrast, if you look at how the phonons of a crystal are coupled to the electrons, you can think of it as a density-density coupling. This is the density of electrons, and the density of the ions in the crystal lattice is the divergence of this displacement field. Displacement field itself has no immediate meaning. You take the divergence of that, that tells you how the density is piling up and the densities can interact. Okay, so this is the typical kind of interaction you get between the phonon mode and the electron, and it comes with an additional derivative. Okay, so if you look at this vertex function of scattering an electron off one of these Goldstone modes, this vertex function in the limit of small momentum transfer will simply go to zero. Okay, so it'll have an extra momentum over here, which is the difference between k and k prime. You set those momenta equal to each other, and this vertex is going to vanish. Okay, so this is very different from the case of the critical bosons we talked about before, the quantum critical point, where this vertex is unity, okay, some number of order one, or the case of the gauge bosons, where you have coupling between a vector potential and an electrical current. So that depends on the momentum, the momenta over here, but these momenta are finally going to be sitting at the Fermi surface, which is some large momentum kf. Okay, so in either case, these cases, this vertex does not vanish, which is why you end up with the non-Fermi liquid physics and so on, whereas for example, in this case of phonons coupled to electrons, there's an additional derivative there that ends up making this coupling innocuous at low energies. Okay, so okay, so in that case, it's consistent to just have stable Fermi liquid and Goldstone modes that are essentially decoupled, so they don't get damped either. Okay. Okay, so one question you can ask: is this inevitable? Is this the only possibility that can arise when you have Goldstone modes in a metallic environment? You know, it turns out that there's one known exception, which was pointed out by these people many years back, where this is known to fail. Okay, where in fact the Goldstone modes couple very strongly to the electrons, And you know, couple in the same way as, for example, those quantum critical fluctuations or the gauge bosons. And this case is when you have a Fermi fluid which spontaneously breaks rotation symmetry. Okay, so it wasn't understood what is special about this case, but we'll see in this talk, what we'll be able to put our finger on exactly what it is that's different for this particular case compared to all the others that were known previously. And once we understand this, you know, the criterion that sets this apart, we'll be able to find new examples where this kind of phenomenon occurs, okay, where you have the strong coupling and the possibility of non-Fermi liquid physics. Okay, so let me describe this particular situation in a little more detail. Okay, so we're thinking about a phase, not a critical point. So you're starting with a system that has complete rotation symmetry. So it's a little bit artificial for a solid because we have to ignore the lattice. You would ignore the crystalline lattice, or somehow argue that it's not really making any, not playing an important role, because we're going to appeal to having complete rotation symmetry that to get an orientational mode that's going to be gapless. Okay, so start in the continuum, let's say, with some density of fermions. You have a Fermi surface. You put in some appropriate interactions that leads to a spontaneous distortion of this Fermi surface. Okay, it's a Pomeranchuk instability, and you end up selecting a direction for this long axis of the ellipse. So it's often called pneumatic order. but then you have the gapless excitations, rotation of this ellipse, which can couple to the quasiparticle excitations. And what they found, simply by doing a direct calculation, is that this coupling is very strong. Okay, and that leads to a non-Fermi liquid behavior for the quasiparticles, and you know, Landau damping for these for the Goldstone modes. Okay, so how does that work? So when you get this elliptic Fermi surface, it changes the dispersion of your electrons. Okay, it changes it from this p squared over 2m to something that is anisotropic that depends on this angle. Okay, so you have an interaction Hamiltonian. There should be some parameter over here, lambda or something like that, times you know, this anisotropic dispersion. And you can expand in small fluctuations of this Goldstone mode. So theta is the Goldstone mode that parameterizes the rotation symmetry breaking. And what you find is that there's a coupling that looks like this, theta times the momenta at the Fermi surface. And if you write down what it means in terms of a vertex, unlike all the other cases that were known for Goldstone modes, this vertex actually does not vanish. Okay, you sit on the Fermi surface, and therefore this kx and ky are typically some non-vanishing momentum. Okay, they vanish only at 4 points. At those 4 points, there's no coupling, but over most of the Fermi surface, there is this very strong coupling. Okay, and you know, this leads to the conclusion I mentioned before, that if you do the same calculation that we talked about, look at how the fermions damp the Goldstone modes. They will be overdamped, and they will lead, and those overdamped modes will actually lead to a non-Fermi liquid behavior for these electrons, okay, if some other instability doesn't intervene. Okay, so what's special about this? We'll actually show we'll you know, point out this general criterion, which will be able to isolate the speciality of this example, and we'll be able to find a new scenario because we'll have a simple criterion that we need to satisfy. Okay, so it actually pays in this subject to take a more general viewpoint rather than work with several examples. Let's just think of some general Hamiltonian, which where the symmetry is spontaneously broken. So you start with the Hamiltonian that's symmetric, you go into some particular symmetry broken vacuum state, and then you write like a mean field theory that tells you how the electrons propagate in this particular symmetry broken vacuum. Okay, so let's call that H0. And then we want to derive how the Goldstone modes couple to the electrons. Okay, and the way you do this is that you require that this interaction term plus the original mean field Hamiltonian overall is invariant under the symmetry transformation. Okay, and that tells you that this additional piece, the interaction term, is simply the commutator of the generator of these symmetries times this mean field Hamiltonian. Okay, so all you're doing is that you take a particular mean field Hamiltonian, rotate the ordered state by a little bit, that's this operation, and that difference from the original Hamiltonian is the interaction term. Okay, so so now we'd like to understand what this coupling is. This coupling is really the key to all of the physical consequences, whether it vanishes or not when these momenta become equal. Okay, so we'd like to look at this matrix element. I have two momenta that are going to approach each other of the interaction Hamiltonian. Okay, now the fermion states themselves, we're talking about a Fermi C that's obtained by diagonalizing this mean field Hamiltonian. So you have some states labeled by momentum, and these are eigenstates of this H0. Okay, there's also this index N. There may be many bands, but I'll kind of not really worry about that as I go on. Okay, so this is the vertex that we're interested in. And as soon as you say that this interaction term is of this form, you get a very strong constraint on this vertex simply due to symmetry. Okay, and the constraint is that this matrix element is proportional to the difference in the kinetic energy at these two momentum points, k and k prime. Okay, so it appears that if I send this pair of momenta equal to one another, let them approach one another, this term is going to vanish, and therefore this vertex is going to be zero in the limit of small momentum transfer. Okay, and this is the reason why, in most cases, the Goldstone modes have this derivative coupling. Okay, so now it may actually seem that this will always happen, but there's a caveat over here, is you have implicitly assumed that this matrix element is well-defined. Okay, so the only way to escape from this conclusion, the conclusion that there are always derivative couplings attached to this Goldstone mode fermion interaction, is to ask if this matrix element can blow up. Okay, you want it to blow up in exactly the right way that it can cancel this difference in energy at these two nearby k points. Okay, so when can this diverge? We want a divergence that looks like this. Okay, you want the divergence to be the reciprocal of this momentum transfer. And in order for that to happen, there should be some reason. It can't just be a coincidence. And what you can notice is that what's playing an important role in all of these considerations is the momentum. Okay, we're talking about a Fermi liquid. We want to have a well-defined Fermi surface, and that's a surface in momentum space. Okay, so the condition is going to involve momentum in some way. I'm thinking about a continuous translation symmetry, but you can do all of this for a discrete translation symmetry where you have a crystal momentum. Okay, but for simplicity, let me just assume there's a continuous symmetry present after the spontaneous symmetry breaking. Okay, so the general criterion then for this matrix element to diverge is that if I look at the commutator of this generator of the symmetry and translations, that should be non-vanishing. Okay, that's something that is an operator that's not identically zero. Okay, and how does this help us? So simply take the matrix elements of this commutator, and you can just move it over to the right-hand side. These k's are eigenstates of the momentum. So you get that this matrix element is the reciprocal of the difference in momentum. Yeah, times something else, which is the operator that should be non-vanishing. It has exactly the right divergence in order to cancel the zero that we had before. So if you combine this with the expression in the previous slide, you get a coupling that is non-vanishing, which depends on the matrix elements of this commutator, times some dispersion of your electron bands. Okay, so this will guarantee for you that the coupling between electrons and Goldstone modes is strong. And yeah.
So if you have some commutation relation with P, can you get a stronger divergence that will actually send your coupling to the
So you're saying think of something like P squared or something like that, or if P squared fails to commute, then P will also fail to commute. So I don't think that's going to give you an independent condition. So this is the So I suspect this is the most general way to get a non-vanishing coupling, but it's hard to prove that. My suspicion is this is the only way in which you can get a non-vanishing coupling. So in fact, once you figure out all the different ways in which to satisfy this, you would have found all the different ways in which Goldstone modes could give you non-Fermi liquids. But that's hard to prove that. But this is definitely one way of doing it. Okay, so once you have this non-vanishing coupling, you know, you can run the old arguments, and you will find Landau damping of this Goldstone mode. If you look at the Goldstone mode propagating through the electronic background, you get this Landau damping. There's a coefficient, which is exactly these vertex functions, which have to be non-zero in order to get this thing to be overdamped. Okay, and similarly for the, you can make the same argument for the electronic lifetime, and the usual caveats apply. This holds as long as other instabilities don't intervene. Okay, and once you have this non-vanishing coupling, really the strong statement you can make is that this decoupled worlds for Goldstone mode and Fermi liquid is no longer tenable. Okay, so now let's look at some examples. Okay, so we have this general criterion, and you know, let's look at some simple examples where this commutator actually vanishes. Okay, so if this Q is any internal symmetry, for example, if it's spin rotation symmetry, internal spin rotations, or any other internal symmetry you can think of, it has nothing to do with translations. Okay, and then this thing must commute, and in those cases, you will always get this derivative coupling, this vanishing coupling, and you know, your Fermi liquid is safe, at least at weak couplings. Okay, similarly for phonons, if you think of a regular crystal, this Q is just translations. So you're asking if translations commute with translations, and they do. But that's why the coupling between electrons and phonons is conventional. You have this vanishing coupling. Okay, but now let's test the example that was identified by these Oganesian, Kiehl's and Fratkin. That's actually spatial rotation symmetry breaking. Okay, it's rather different from spin rotations because you're actually breaking the rotations of space. so the generator of the symmetry breaking is angular momentum. Okay, it's LZ, and that doesn't commute with translations. Okay, so LZ and PX, for example, will give you PY. If you take this criterion and figure out what the non-vanishing coupling is, it's exactly what you get from the direct calculation. Okay, so this really allows you to identify what's special about that particular scenario. It's a symmetry breaking that doesn't commute with translations. Okay, so now once you know this general fact, you can try to plug in, try to cook up. Yeah.
Sorry, in the you needed the, there's also a numerator, right? Lambda AR sandwich.
Yeah.
When we just saying it's not zero, you know somehow that those matrix elements won't go to zero as
a table,
which is
good. Yeah. So. So this is sort of some generic operator. So let's just take an example. Let's say you were to do this.
It's clear in this example.
Right? Yeah, in this particular case,
and
yeah.
Could you cook up that the commutator not zero, but somehow these matrix elements vanish?
Yeah, so you're asking if this particular operator is such that all the diagonal matrix elements vanish.
Yeah. Somehow it causes momentum increase, so that it makes it orthogonal.
Yeah. So, so it turns out it can vanish at certain points on the Fermi surface by symmetries, you know, it's hard to imagine that it'll always vanish. You know, unless it was itself a commutator of, you know, if this lambda itself was such that it was, you'd want it to also go as something like k minus k prime. Which means that it is itself a commutator of momentum with something else. It is a commutator of this Q with momentum, but I think having it to be vanishing is, for the diagonal elements to vanish, that would be unusual for that operator. Yeah, so you know, for example, could it change the momentum? That it can't, right? It's got to be a zero momentum operator, the way it's set up. Now, I guess it could be, you may worry that it's somehow anti-symmetric in these indices, but I think that can't happen either. But that's a good question. I think you can show that it would be extremely unusual for it to be zero on just for any k and k prime. If you just were to change the Fermi surface, that would be very unusual if you have this as an operator identity. Yeah, so, okay, so is there another example that one can come up with where you have such a non-vanishing coupling? Okay, so any ideas? if you have not read the paper. Yeah, so you know, anything that's internal is out of the question. You really want to think of a situation where you know, translations are acting in some strange way on your symmetry breaking. Okay, and so the one thing we could come up with, and I think this is the only other one, is if these translations are actually not regular translations but magnetic translations. Okay, so the commutator of magnetic translations is non-trivial, you know, so we can, you know, from this mathematical fact, you can back out a physical scenario where you would have these kind of couplings. Okay, so what is the scenario? So imagine that you have electrons in the continuum, and you apply a uniform magnetic field to them. Okay, so that's so you have translation symmetry because the magnetic field is uniform, but the translation symmetry is not the regular one. The momentum in the translation in the x and y directions don't commute anymore. It's the magnetic translation group. Okay, so these translation operators will now be the derivative operator minus the vector potential, AP minus EA. Okay, so so that those translations have this particular algebra. Okay, so now imagine that you spontaneously break this translation symmetry, and you end up getting a crystal. Okay, so and the electrons could have some interactions in this in this magnetic field, and you end up generating a crystal. And so you've spontaneously broken these magnetic this magnetic translation symmetry. Okay, so the resulting crystal will have phonons, will have gapless modes corresponding to this broken translation symmetry. Okay, so so this generator Q over here is simply the magnetic translation operator, and then eventually we are thinking of starting with some uniform magnetic field. You have Landau level dispersion for the electrons, no dispersion. You create this lattice spontaneously that gives you some dispersion to the Landau levels. Here's the usual Hofstadter problem that breaks this translation symmetry, ends up giving you some dispersion. So you have some Fermi C of these electrons. And the momenta of these electrons are labeled by crystal momentum, where again, this crystal momentum is derived from these magnetic translations. Okay, so the analog of this translation operator is also the crystal momentum. So you look at the commutator. That's relevant to see whether or not you have this non-vanishing coupling. And this predicts that you'll actually have a non-vanishing coupling. Yeah, and you can actually do this calculation directly. Now that you know where to look, you can simply look at a weak potential, for example, on the lowest Landau level. You get some dispersion and directly evaluate the coupling between the phonon of this of some periodic potential and the electrons. And you get exactly what you expect from this calculation. Okay, so this is a case where you have some couplings that are non-vanishing, and actually it takes a very simple form. the interaction between the Goldstone mode U, which is this displacement of the crystal lattice, and the electrons is simply this form, U cross J, and you can see that there's no derivative acting on this U. Yeah?
I did not understand this direct calculation. So I thought you were saying that you want spontaneous symmetry.
Yeah.
Together,
that's right. Yeah.
So why do you need to? What's the role of this direct calculation? Why do you need to put the potential there?
So the scenario is initially you have no potential. You have just translation symmetry. So that is no Goldstone modes, of course, because the vacuum is translationally symmetric.
I thought that's the scenario where you have potential for the.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And then
you get a crystal.
Then you get a crystal, and the crystal has phonons.
Yeah.
And we're looking at the coupling of the electrons to those phonons in this magnetic field. So if you didn't have the magnetic field, then these things commute. Right? The translation symmetry is broken. That's just the regular translations. This is, of course, translations, and they commute. That's the usual electron phonon problem without the magnetic field. But with the magnetic field, everything is different. Because, you know, to begin with, these magnetic translation operators do not commute. So you can just, you know, take this lowest Landau level and put on a potential.
So this potential, is it in real space?
Yeah, it's in real space, yeah.
But in principle, you don't need it for this construction.
Yeah.
You don't need to break the measurement.
That's right, yeah. So it's like a mean field theory. So actually, you have no potential. You actually have some interactions between the electrons, completely translationally symmetric. But then you go to low energies, and you find that it spontaneously breaks translation symmetry. So the way you model that, as usual, is you say that there's an expectation value to the density. And you know, for example, you may have some interaction between the electrons, which is you know, some short-range interaction, let's say. And then you say that in the ground state, there is some you know, there's some crystal of this form. There's some expectation value to this that's developed in the ground state. So then you can write on a mean field theory where you just take expectation values over here, and you get a quadratic Hamiltonian. That's the effective potential. And then that effective potential, so this gives you some potential V of x, it has phonon modes, which is just displacement of this. And
this
potential
is periodic.
It's periodic, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's right, yeah. And that gives you some Brillouin zone, and it gives you bands in the Brillouin zone. And then if you look at how it couples to the Goldstone mode, it's U times the gradient of this potential. If you evaluate this in the matrix elements in K and K prime, you find that you get a non-vanishing coupling, exactly like this. Okay, but the thing that's important over here is that these states are actually states of an electron in a magnetic field with the crystal lattice present. So that modifies the wave functions in order to give you a coupling that has some of this non-derivative coupling. And the strength of the coupling is controlled by B. So you set B to zero, of course, you go back to the usual coupling. Okay, so there's actually some physical intuition we can develop for why you get this kind of coupling. Yeah, and so this physical intuition should be used with some care. You can get it wrong. It's better to have the calculation and then come up with the intuition rather than the other way around. Okay, so you can see from that coupling, this U is looking like a gauge field, right? It looks like J dot A. If I think of you know, U, if I switch the components around, this looks like a gauge field that's coupled to the electronic current. Okay, so why does the Goldstone mode behave like a gauge field? So if you think about this system, you've got some emergent crystalline lattice. You can think of the electrons as hopping on that lattice. Okay, now let's say you have a phonon mode that gives you a compression of this lattice. Okay, so let's say the lattice is compressed, this divergence of U is non-zero. Then the electrons see some smaller flux inside that compressed lattice, right? Because they're enclosing a smaller area, less of the magnetic field inside that. Okay, so there's a change in the magnetic field that's effectively connected to this Goldstone mode. Okay, so if you think of that as just the curl of some vector potential, this vector potential is linearly related to this Goldstone mode. Okay, so it's not surprising that a J dot A coupling translates into this kind of coupling. Okay, so so the rough idea, of course, is that phonons are somehow mimicking a gauge field, and we know that gauge fields have a non-derivative coupling. So that's why this phonon couples directly to the electrons in the presence of this external magnetic field. Okay, so we can ask, can you actually do something interesting with this? So the other realization we talked about, where you can have this strong coupling, is a pneumatic phase. So for that, you need no background crystal lattice and so on. That seems to be a big requirement. This, on the other hand, seems to be more doable. Okay, so what you want to do is, we talked about first applying a magnetic field and then forming a crystal. Okay, but physically, it's completely equivalent to form the crystal first. Okay, so just take any solid and apply a magnetic field. Okay, that's an equivalent situation. And you know, the same calculation will tell you that, again, there is some non-derivative coupling between the phonons, the regular phonons of the crystal, coupled to these electrons in the magnetic field. Okay, so that seems to give you some remarkable prediction that you can apply a field to a metal and you should get a non-Fermi liquid. Okay. Now, of course, you know, that's never been observed, and there's a very good reason for that. So you can ask, what is the energy scale where you would see this? Okay. So the energy scale is very, very small. Essentially because if you think about applying a magnetic field, the magnetic length is much larger than the lattice spacing. Okay? So you know, be very optimistic. Let's say you can apply 100 Tesla field. Okay? So the magnetic length is 10 times larger than, say, the lattice constant of graphene. Right? And if you look at the dispersion, so the lambda levels are very flat. You put on this periodic potential. Typically, the dispersion that you induce into this periodic potential, which controls the size of your current, is exponentially small in the ratio of these areas. Okay, so even on a 100 Tesla field, nothing is happening to the system, basically because the lambda level is extremely flat. Okay, and there's really no current that's being carried by the electrons to couple to your Goldstone modes. Okay, so...
But these Lipkin and Moiré patterns of where you've seen the block bands, I mean, the dispersion of that event.
So there, I guess, the effect of the A is actually could be 10 times bigger.
Yeah.
So you need a kind of a mesoscopic sized crystal.
Yeah, but I don't know the subphase. I don't know the transformer, but anyway. Well, subphase is also okay, I guess, as long as.
Yeah, but you need phonons, yeah. Presumably has, maybe you don't really want, if it's very rigid, of course, then there's another issue with this, the stiffness of the phonon. If it's like a 3D phonon or something, you really want an isolated 2D system. But yeah, that may be an interesting idea, yeah.
String fields in graphene, in the absence of magnetic,
you need. Yeah. Yeah, no, that turns out is not, does not work. The thing is, you really need an external magnetic field. So a proxy for the external magnetic field doesn't work, like a strain. Or I'll say this in a few slides. This idea of this Kermion crystal, that also produces an effective magnetic field that can be very, very large. But it's not an applied magnetic field. And it turns out in that case, there's a subtle distinction which makes this because of which this coupling doesn't occur. You really need a translation symmetry to begin with of this magnetic type, magnetic translation symmetry. Whereas, for example, a strain graphene doesn't really have that translation symmetry, this magnetic translation symmetry. Or I'll argue, even for this Kermion crystal, you don't have that. So you're stuck with applied magnetic fields where this is literally the limit. But you have hope over here on this side that you can try to make bigger crystals. Another thing you could do is not look at a metal, look at a semiconductor, right? Actually, there's one other exception which may be interesting. So this flatness of the lambda level only holds if you're away from a Van't Hoff singularity. If you're near a Van't Hoff singularity of a band structure, you can actually get significant dispersion. But many other things also happen at a Van't Hoff singularity. So that's one has to investigate whether that's actually promising or not. Okay, so the other possibility is to lower the density and look at a semiconductor. So you want this magnetic length to be of order the separation between the electrons. And if you're in the quantum Hall regime, so you have some small doping of two-dimensional electron gas, you could get these sort of crystalline phases. And in fact, there is experimental evidence for some sort of stripe phases in the higher Landau levels. Low Landau levels, you get these fractional quantum Hall states, but in higher Landau levels, when you partially fill the Landau level, you end up getting these symmetry broken states like stripe and bubble phases. These are crystals, these are like charge density waves. And there you have this, a closer match between the magnetic length and the separation between electrons. Yeah, and so this is some case that might be interesting where the coupling to these phonons of this crystal would be anomalous, coupling to the electrons would be anomalous. And of course, the disorders plays a bigger role in these kind of systems. All the length scales are bigger, but still, hopefully there is a big enough window to see some of these effects. Yeah.
Because there, the translation operators on Kuiper, it's like having effect on the space.
Yeah.
That scenario works
great. That scenario does not work. Actually, I'll get to that, yeah. So that's a bit like this question over here. So imagine you have a Skirmion lattice. So people actually think this kind of Skirmion lattice occurs in some part of this phase diagram. You might think perhaps it could occur in this non-Fermi liquid phase. And in this Kermion lattice, if you look at an electron running through, it follows the local magnetization, picks up a Betty's phase, and it looks like a magnetic field. Okay, so that's a bit like your Chern-Insulate example. Okay, but ultimately, the kind of symmetry that you're breaking is simply regular translation symmetry. You start with regular translation symmetry, and you get this weird kind of crystal, okay, which has some internal magnetic field and stuff like that. But still, the generator of the symmetry is still regular translation symmetry. Okay, and those commute, so you do not expect this non-Fermi liquid behavior. Okay, so whatever is going on giving you this unusual power law, you know, if you attribute it to non-Fermi liquid physics, it can't be coming from coupling to the Goldstone modes. Okay, and of course, this is transport, so you know, transport is one step further away from pinpointing whether it's a Fermi liquid or not. So there are some scenarios you can come up with. So we have talked about some of them in this other paper, where you could get some unusual transport but still have a Fermi liquid. Okay, so I think this is another utility of this general scenario. You can check when interesting stuff does not happen. And I think it's useful because version one, we actually came to the wrong conclusion that this would be a non-Fermi liquid. Because if you do just a direct calculation, you can miss terms. So it turns out there's a compensating term, which, there's one term that looks like this hopping I talked about. But there's a compensating term which ultimately arises because this is just regular translations that's broken. Okay, and that compensating term ultimately tells you it is a Fermi liquid and you have well-defined Goldstone modes. That's version two. So this is one of the cases where version one and version two actually have different conclusions, unlike most other papers. Okay, so I mainly stressed on the non-Fermi liquid aspect of this physics, but there's another way to view this, which is you can ask, are Goldstone bosons stable? Okay, if I tell you that there's a broken continuous symmetry, are you guaranteed to get well-defined Goldstone bosons? Okay, now it turns out in Lorentz invariant systems, you can find this in Weinberg's book, there's a very gentle statement that if you have Lorentz invariance, you always have well-defined Goldstone modes. Okay, and it doesn't matter whether there are other gapless modes, like gapless Dirac fermions coupled to them, you'll never get overdamping of these modes. Okay. In solids, the answer actually depends on various things. It depends on whether you're in a metallic state, for example. And if you're in a metallic state, it depends on the nature of the symmetry breaking. You need to answer these additional questions, and the additional constraint you need in order to have well-defined Goldstone bosons is that commutator is zero. Okay, when it's zero, you know that there's no anomalous coupling. It's just the conventional coupling. At weak coupling, it's irrelevant, and you can have these decoupled Goldstone modes and Fermi liquids. Okay, and otherwise, the coupling is relevant. Various things could happen, including non-Fermi liquids, superconductors, everything that's we think of as being very interesting can happen. Okay, so let me just conclude. I think I'm ahead of time. Okay, so somehow it was, people had missed this general analysis, at least as far as I know, of analyzing the coupling between Goldstone modes and electrons. But I think now we have such a complete analysis of this. There's a simple one-line criterion. The interesting thing about this criterion is that it depends only on the pattern of what symmetry is broken. Okay, a lot of details about what the final state is and so on are not really important. It just integrates some very basic properties of the system and can tell you of which of these two scenarios you're in. Okay, and it allowed us not only to understand some of these puzzling results that are already around, but we also could predict a new situation where you have translation symmetry breaking in a magnetic field. Okay, and perhaps this is the only other one. We couldn't think of any other, but it would be nice to either prove that or dispose of it. Okay, so anyway, let me stop here.
Shed some light on some like other experimental materials where people said maybe it's a non-Fermi liquid based on transport, and they had some mechanism in mind. Does this rule out some of those stories people have? Is there another material?
Yeah, for example, you know, the thing is, it could be some other mechanism, right? Like over here, we would not have expected non-Fermi liquid behavior based on this analysis. Now, it just tells you that Goldstone modes are not there. You're forced to appeal to something more exotic. Now, it could also be disordered, right? And once things are disordered, it's these distinctions are not that clear. Temperature dependence becomes, you know, more more involved and stuff like that. So it helps you rule out theories. I'm not sure if it can actually, you know, shed direct light on some experiment. But maybe it also tells you where you should look. I mean, where you have some control over the understanding. We think we understand Goldstone modes pretty well. We understand Fermi liquids pretty well. And you can try to couple them. In some cases, the coupling is interesting. Most cases, it's not. They just, at low energies at least, I mean. At the very lowest energies, they don't actually do much. But there are some cases like this broken translation symmetries in the field where interesting things are expected to happen. So it's sort of a minimal requirement to get to something interesting. You don't even have to get to a transition. You can just look at an entire phase and you should get this physics.
For higher dimensions, does it still hold?
Yeah, it holds in any dimension. I just gave examples in 2D. Yeah. So there are some obvious generalizations that work in 3D. Like you could have a three-dimensional solid with a magnetic field, and the coupling along certain parts of the Fermi surface will be anomalous. Like on the north and south poles, the coupling will be the conventional one. But along the wherever you have a component of current that's in plane, you'll have this anomalous coupling, which will sort of get smaller and smaller as you get to the top of the Fermi surface. Yeah, so I just stuck to 2D just for clarity. But similarly with this, if you break orientational symmetry in 3D, you also get this kind of strong coupling. Now, the effect of this coupling is weaker in some sense in 3D. You still get this Landau damping. So as far as the Goldstone modes are concerned, they'll still be overdamped. But if you look at how that those damped bosons affect the electrons, the effect is weaker. Okay, here at first cut, the effect is extremely strong. It makes the here the effect is very strong, right? This damping is very large at low energies. It's not that large in three dimensions. But still, this, you know, having decoupled systems is not viable once you have these kind of couplings. Yeah.
So you took this damping as an indication of non-Fermi liquid behavior.
Yeah.
And in your model, according to your Pythagorean, when this commutator is non-zero, does it imply at least in the dimension that it's going to be two-thirds energy to?
No. So there are many scenarios. It's like, you know, it's flowing away from the decoupled fixed point.
Right.
This is one scenario that people have discussed.
Right, but in the one that you discussed, do you get the same?
So it's this analysis is very hard. To know exactly where it goes to is very hard.
Right.
So this is things that, you know, these people, it was thought to be solved like in the 90s, and then Sunsek and, you know, Subir and Max and so on, you know, reopened this thing. And I don't know what the status is now, but my understanding is the RPA treatment is roughly right, but there are some subtleties that it misses. But the basic fact of non-Fermi liquid physics, if you are not preempted by some other instabilities, holds, I guess.
Yeah. But in your example, were you able to compute the scaling of the light?
It's the same question as whether it could be done for this case. So you map your problem to some other problem which for which a lot of work has already been done. It's still not a complete solved problem, but we know a lot of things about it. Yeah.
Think of this in the resolution, or this doesn't make sense?
Yeah, so I'm not very sure how to think about a Fermi liquid in the presence of disorder. Right? Maybe there's some sensible way to think about Fermi liquids in the presence of disorder. But you lose the Fermi surface, right? You blur. Yeah, you could have diffusive behavior. That's right. Yeah. But a Fermi liquid is more than that, right? You've got this Fermi surface, and you know, you have this you know, excitations everywhere on this core and Fermi surface. And the question is whether, you know, the lifetime of excitations as you approach that is you know, much longer than the frequency or not. Now, if you want to think about a diffusive metal, you know, that people talk about Fermi liquids in that context as well, but it's not very clear to me how to make that sharp. And
well, there's still a concept of quasi-particle lifetime as a function of energy away from the Fermi level. And that lands to the E squared.
I see. So if you think of...
I guess in 3 dimensions, the E to the 3.5, there are some diffusive type corrections.
Yeah,
but still quasi-particle.
Yeah, so you can
but the Boltzmann was on a big gap, so...
Depends what symmetry you break, I guess. If it's internal symmetry, you can still have Boltzmann modes. But if it's translations, orientations, then it's more complex.
But if it's internal, then it's a derivative coupling.
That's right, that's true. Yeah, if it's internal symmetry, it's going to be derivative coupling. So you have an issue with the Boltzmann modes as well. You have a question? Or? No.
Maybe let's think Ashwin, and he's going to be around till Friday, so there's a lot.